Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, almost 4 years ago, SPIRIT continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is dedicated to the memory of Moshe Ben-Dov Baer, Melvin Steinig, Zichrono Livracha, and Shana Miral Bas Aharon, Miral Steinig, Zichrono Livracha. Our program today is called How to Complete a Halachic Living Will, such an important session for everyone. It will be presented by Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody, and Rabbi Dr. Brody is the Executive Director of Amatai, an organization dedicated to helping Jews navigate their healthcare journey with Jewish wisdom. It's my pleasure and honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to Rabbi Dr. Brody. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Rebbes and Judy, to be here with you and for the wonderful programming that OU does through SPIRIT. So it's great to be here with everyone today. As Rebbes had mentioned, this is a very important topic, particularly fitting for the week of Parshas Vayechi, when we learn about Yaakov Avinu and his ability, which was, according to the Medrash, a blessing to have some last days of life, even when he's sick, when he can give off blessings and directives to his children. And so too, we follow in the footsteps of our Avos and discuss these types of topics on this week of Shabbos Vayechi. And what I'm going to be presenting today, you can look in the chat and you can see the documents as well. Everything I'm going to be presenting is available online on our website, Amatai website. Amatai, you can see in the chat here, I give the website as well. For those of you that are in America, there's an American version. For those of you that are Canadian, there's an Ontario version. If you're from Quebec, the Quebec version will actually be up online tomorrow, but just a slight delay here, but we'll have it available as well. I'll show you briefly so you understand, no one should panic. The documents that we're gonna go through are always available to you. But if you look at the website, you'll see here, there are gonna be two parts to what we're presenting today. One is going to be a healthcare directive, and I'm going to explain what this is. And the second is a conversation guide. And everything is clearly available, laid out for you for free, available for free here online on the Amatai website. Okay, so let's go through and I'm going to explain a little bit about why we're doing what we're doing today. So please, God, we should all live well to 120 and with great health and happiness. But we all understand that there are going to be times in our healthcare journey where there are going to be ups and downs, or that's the path that many, if not most of us, end up going on. And there'll be times when decisions have to be made, decisions sometimes which we'll make with others, with our loved ones, and sometimes decisions have to be made on our behalf because we might not be in a position to make those decisions. And therefore, it is critical right now for yourself and for your loved ones to make arrangements for the types of decisions you want to be made and who should be making those decisions when you're healthy and capable to appoint someone along those lines. Many of us, I'm sure, have set up a last will and testament, a financial will, if you will, in which we dedicate, we leave certain type of instructions about where finances should go and how those should be taken care of. And so too, in the modern era, we must take advantage of the opportunity of healthcare, of the modern miracle of medicine, which can help keep people alive for quite a long time, Baruch Hashem, but can all have a lot of ups and downs in that healthcare journey. And what we're going to try to be doing is to fill out a document which has been around in one form or another, really, since the 80s, particularly the 90s, that's been sponsored by different rabbinic organizations like Agudas Yisrael or Rabbinical Council of America in different forms or another, in which people do two major things or three major things, one of which is they appoint who's going to make the decisions on their behalf if they can't make those decisions. The second is going to be designating, or explain what this means, if you so choose, a rabbi or posek that you want to be consulted as needed. And the third element, and this is a crucial element, is declaring to your healthcare providers that you want decisions to be made in consultation in accordance with Jewish law and custom. Okay, and I'm going to explain to you a little bit what exactly this means as we go through the documents. But the reason why that last part is very important is, as you understand, people show up in hospitals in very different environments. And you imagine if you're a healthcare provider, let's say, you know, it doesn't matter what city you're in, you are encountering so many people from different backgrounds and different worldviews and religions and whatnot. You want to know a little bit about this person. You want to know what their values are so they can help sort of give a framework for the decisions that need to be made. And particularly in a world that promotes autonomy and choice, it's very important to make clear to your healthcare providers, to your loved ones, that you want Jewish law and custom to be part of the framework of how these decisions are being made. And that's precisely what these documents, Halachic Living Wills, are meant to do. Now, what my organization in Matai has done over the past year and a half or so is to develop a new type of halachic living will, which we think takes into account the advances of what we've learned from 30 years of completing these documents, both in the general environment as well as in the religious environment, to have a two-part type of document. And it's a document which we consulted with many rabbis and doctors and lawyers and social workers and a whole slew of people in order to try to make the best document that is sensitive to the needs of the Orthodox community. And so what you're going to see is something that's been presented and approved by various rabbinic organizations. It's been shared by the RCA, by the National Council of the Young Israel, by the Igud Chaplain Commission, and many others, right? In terms of trying to take advantage of what we know today to be true and be useful in these circumstances. We know that it is very difficult to know for sure, right, what we'd want in a certain circumstance. And we don't know exactly where our healthcare journey is going to take us on, but therefore it's important to at least set up a framework for how decisions can be made. And so what I'm going to try to now show you and take you through the process of is to explain the document that we've created. Of course, the Aguda document is still there. The RCA document is there. Well, we think you have various strengths to our document, but the most important is for people to at least sign one of these types of documents. And most important, as we'll get as we go along, is to have conversations with our loved ones about our religious and general preferences and values in these types of decisions. So I'm going to share with you now the document on the screen. The document, as I said, though, is available always for free on our website, amitai.org/netivot. Okay. And what we're going to try to do is, and by the way, if you've printed it up or you want to yourself, right, you could even start to just scribble to yourself notes about how you'd fill this in, how you'd complete these documents as we go along. The document that we're going to be seeing right now is divided into two parts. We call it netivot. Netivot means pathways. We don't know where a healthcare journey or pathway is going to be on, but whatever pathways we go on, we want to be guided by the principles that we state out in this document. And the first document I'm going to be sharing with you right now is a healthcare proxy and directive. This is a legal document. Now, what I mean by that is that it needs to be signed, it needs to be witnessed, signed by you and witnessed, and it should be filed properly, right, as a legal document. I'm going to explain exactly what you're doing in here. The instructions, of course, lay this out, which is meant to be something which is a formal legal document. Now, I'm not here giving you legal advice. There are many people that take this document, use it as a template, and they bring it to their lawyers as well. But certainly this is usable on its own without being signed by a lawyer. The law, the way it's set up in both the United States and Canada, is you can have do-it-yourself, so to speak, healthcare proxy and directives. And this can be signed and completed by you, even today for that matter, and you'll have a legally binding healthcare proxy and directive. Okay, now in the instructions on the document, we explain at length what it is that that you need to do to fill in here, but I'm gonna go straight to the document itself and walk us through it so that way we can learn from this as well. So the first thing, of course, you do is you have to give your personal information. Your personal information, I stress here that this isn't a couple's document, right? This is not something that you just sign together. Each adult above the age of 18 can and should sign one of these documents. By the way, I state, that while this is an event that's catered towards people, are older, but really this should be a document that's signed by people over the age of 18. Right? There's no reason anyone should be not having these types of documents, and you'll see why as we go along. So you fill in your basic name, and you're gonna make a decision now. And the decision is if I designate the following person to act on my behalf, if at any time I am not able to make or communicate healthcare decisions for myself. Who is the person that you'd want to speak on your behalf? Now you have to think through a little bit. Who exactly is the type of person? And we discuss this here in the instructions. It's got to be a person who's over 18. They got to be a person who's available or will make themselves available. Right? They have to be a person who's willing to assert themselves, to express their wishes, because, in hospitals, you need to have a good advocate for you. And you have to trust this person who will honor your values and act in accordance with your preferences to the best of their ability. And why am I stressing this point? This is about you. This is about you and who's going to make the decisions on your behalf. And the premise of this is what we call substituted judgment. Meaning you're at a situation where you can't necessarily make decisions for yourself. So someone is substituting for you and making those decisions on your behalf. Who is it that you have that you want to do this? Who's going to be readily available to do this? Now, I want to say who I wouldn't put down unless you've discussed this. Could be you have a unique situation. I wouldn't put down your rabbi. Okay, now I love rabbis. I even am a rabbi, right? And we'll talk about the role of rabbis coming up. But this is a person who's going to have to be able to get to the hospital or somewhere else and be there on your behalf. And rabbis aren't always available in that way. Okay, so you're looking right now for a family member or friend. It could be a child. Depending on your age, you might put your spouse. It could be a sibling. It could be a favorite niece or nephew. It could be a best friend. Right, there are a lot of different people we have in our lives, and we want to ask, right, who's going to be available and able to speak on your behalf. For some people here, that's an easy question to answer. For some people, it's not so simple. Right? And a lot of people have this dilemma in the following reason. So suppose, people here are, let's say, in your 80s, and you have your spouse, Baruch Hashem, you're alive and well in the 80s. But you might say, we'll put down my spouse for this job because maybe they won't be able to make that decision on my behalf. And therefore, I want to choose someone else, right? If you're in your 40s or 50s and happily married, then you might say, okay, I'm going to choose my spouse for this person. It could be amongst your children. You might say, some people say, I want the doctor in the family to be that person. Maybe they're more knowledgeable about it, but that's not always true. They may not share the same values, might not be as available. Is someone asked in the chat already, should it be someone who is able to live in close proximity to you? So proximity is certainly one of those factors. You want someone who's going to be able to make those decisions. It is true that in the age of Zoom and technology today, many times hospitals will respect a proxy who's speaking from, virtually, but not always. And so that's one of those questions you're going to ask is, who is it that I think that is going to be available and readily available? Now, some people say to me, I've got 4 kids, right? And this gets a little bit tricky, right? I got 4 kids. One is yeshivish and lives in Lakewood. One's modern Orthodox and lives in Teaneck. One is traditional and lives on the Upper West Side. And one isn't religious, or let's get out of 5th, one made Aliyah, right? Just get the variety pack in there, right? So many people have this, and you ask yourself, who is it that you want to choose? And the answer is certainly shared religious values might be one of those factors for sure, but not necessarily, right? You want the person who's going to try to do what you think is best on your behalf and represent your values doing the best that they can. Now, one of the things you're going to see here, and pull this back up for a minute, is that we give here alternates, right? And we say, because sometimes the first person isn't available, you should definitely try to find as much as possible a second, first alternate, second alternate, and put down three people here. And it goes in this pecking order. Now you might say, you know, I want all my kids to make the decision together. Or I want, you know, my best friend and my niece to make this decision together, whatever it is. We don't recommend that model for the following reason. At the end of the day, and this is what we think is experience has shown, someone's got to make the decision. Someone's got to be there and the buck stops here, which doesn't mean, of course, that you can't tell the family members, hey, I want you guys to talk this out. I've appointed Reuven or Shira to be the proxy because they're in closer proximity or because they're the most available. But of course, I want you all to talk this out and work this out together. That is certainly something you should do. And something I want to stress right now is that it's important for anyone who you think is going to think they have a say in the decisions to know about your preferences. I want to explain to you why this is so important. Suppose you show up in the hospital and you have three kids, and one of them knows they're the proxy, but the other two didn't. What are the other two going to say? How come mom or dad chose Reuven and not me? Right? You think about that. And I've had cases like this where people will call me up and they say, listen, my mom appointed me. We share values. I'm in the healthcare profession, whatever it is. But she didn't tell my brother, my sister, whatever it was, that she appointed me as the proxy, and he's really upset about it, and he wants me to make a different decision. So one of the things we're trying to do here is to prevent machloke and strife at a later point. Very, very important. You're doing this as a favor to yourself. You're doing this as a favor to your family members, and therefore you want to let them know, right, who it is, right, that is going to make these decisions on your behalf. Okay, so in this document, we've taken the motto of saying you have a healthcare proxy and you have an alternate. Now, and when possible, alternates. I want to mention one thing, by the way. I spoke about this in Toronto a few weeks ago at the Bayit and Shaarei Shamayim. And on both occasions, people came up to me and said to me, I don't have anyone to be my proxy. I don't have kids, or I'm not close to my kids, whatever it might be. And I don't have anyone. And I sat there and I talked it through with them. In the general population, this is a massive issue today, with those unrepresented patients, people who don't have someone to speak on their behalf. No one in the from community should feel this way. And so I want to encourage everyone, if you know someone who you think might be in that position, to talk to them about that and help them about that. And if you yourself feel you're in that position, please feel free to reach out to me. Please feel free to reach out to other people in your community, to the Bikur Cholim, to the rabbi, whatever it might be. You should not feel like you're in this position. Okay, that's part of what it means to have a firm community, is the community looks out for each other, something which is very, very important. Okay, so you've now decided on your proxy. Okay, by the way, in some places, the proxy is called the healthcare agent, or it can be called the power of attorney for healthcare matters. In Quebec, it's called the mandatory, but it's all referring to the same thing, someone who's going to make decisions on your behalf if you're not able to make or communicate health decisions for myself. Now, here is where we get to the so quote unquote, the Jewish part of this, in which you're going to be making your declaration. This is the legal part of what you're telling. And I want to explain what we're doing here and what we're not doing. In the old days, 20, 30 years ago, the model of healthcare directives, of advanced healthcare directives, is you'd have like all sorts of choices. If I'm in situation X, I want treatment Y, or I don't want treatment Y. If I'm in situation B, if I have a car accident, if I have major brain damage, if I have ALS, I want this, not that, and so forth and so on. That model has been shown not to work, because many people have no idea where the health journey is going to take them on. They change their mind or whatnot. And so what this document actually is trying to do, we're going to see as we go along in the conversation guide, how you can share a little bit of your general outlook. But what this document is really trying to do is establish on a legal level, who is your proxy, and to tell the healthcare providers that you really want them to be your proxy, and to have authority to make decisions on your behalf. You give them all rights for confidentiality under HIPAA rules, right? You give them authorization to make necessary arrangements at a hospital, at a hospice, at a nursing home, at a convalescent home. You can see here in the details here, right? They can deal with matters of nutrition, hydration, shelter, the ability to agree to refuse or withdraw consent, et cetera. The point of this declaration is to give them full authority. We're trying to strengthen on a legal level the status of the proxy or the authority, and to declare that my proxy has full authority to make decisions for me about my health care, including end of life care, if I'm not able to communicate health care decisions for myself. This includes my desire, which I hereby direct my proxy, that all decision making about health care should be done in accordance with Jewish law and custom. Okay. And we are very clear about what we're saying and we're not saying. We're not getting into specifics about DNRs, DNIs, and surgeries, and dialysis, or anything like this. But we are saying that in the full respect of decision-making, you want this proxy to have authority to do this, make these decisions, as opposed to, let's say, a healthcare board or someone else, and a conservator or guardian, and you want those decisions to be made done in accordance with Jewish law and custom. And you might say to yourself, wait a minute, what exactly does Jewish law and custom mean? Right? We just said, we told now our healthcare providers we want things to be done under Jewish law and custom, but what does that mean? And we've created this document in a way which says that you ultimately are going to have to decide what exactly that means. Meaning, I can guess based on all the experience we've had in giving these presentations, there are going to be people on this webinar who have different hashkafot, they have different worldviews, they have different rabbis, they have different poskim, they have this or that in their lives, and they have different little bit of different visions of this, and they want the ability for this to be done in accordance with their vision, right, of how this Jewish law and custom, right, sees these things. And therefore, right, you can give now the option to say as follows. As to the requirements of Jewish law and custom, I advise my proxy to consult with the following rabbi or religious institution. This is your opportunity to say, I have someone who I trust, whose values I share, whose psak I respect, however you want to formulate it, and I want you to consult with this person. Now, I'll get into things a little bit more as we go along, why this is very critical, but we also once again here give options for an alternate. Why? Because your rabbi isn't always available when they want to reach them, right? So just think about right now, there are a lot of shul rabbis who are visiting Israel right now or been in Israel or whatnot. And let's say you need someone to consult with and not able to be consulted with. Who should get the next call? Think about it, right? Who would they call, particularly if this was a time-sensitive decision? And therefore, we give alternates. And one of the things we've done at Amatai as well, by the way, is that we have a 24/7 hotline. So anyone who needs, they don't have a rabbi, want us to help with that, or they want us to be the alternate, can designate us as the hotline. We have the phone number here as well on the documents in many different places. And you're welcome to designate us as an alternate or as a primary consultant. But you could also choose your shul, right? You could also choose different rabbinical councils, right? Just make sure that those rabbinical councils and shuls are set up and equipped to answer those types of questions. And this is your opportunity to designate who the rabbi is. Now, you might say to me, why is this so important? And the answer is, and by the way, those rabbis don't need to be local. Meaning it, even the primary one doesn't necessarily need to be local, because many of the times you're not asking your rabbi to sign anything. This document makes it crystal clear. The only one who has authority to make decisions is the proxy. They're the only ones who have authority to sign it. We did this for legal reasons. A, because we didn't want any ambiguity for this document to be challenged on a legal level. We think that's a little bit of the weaknesses of some of the other documents out there in the world that keep us a little bit ambiguous. And we did this because you should have the opportunity to consult with rabbis wherever they are, on the phone, over Zoom, over FaceTime, whatever it might be. But they're not the ones who are able to decide. Now, who is this rabbi that you should choose? So you should choose the Rav who you think is indicative of your values and will give the proper type of psak based on your hashkafa, based on your worldview. It could be your longtime shul rabbi. It could be one of your kids' rabbis. It could be someone else. It could be someone who's a specialist in this area. This is something which is critical for you to decide. And let me explain to you why. I got a Shaila on our helpline about 3 months ago of someone who told me the following. Their mom, a sort of modern Orthodox, she had three kids who are quite, what you call, quote unquote, yeshivish, right? And one who was not from, and she's modern Orthodox. And the mom had made it very clear and said, I want you to consult with this rabbi, who was the rabbi that she most identified with, but probably wasn't the rabbi that would have been consulted with by some of the other siblings. And what was the mom doing? She said, listen, I love you all. I respect you all. All of us have made our own decisions in life. Some of you become this way, some of you that way, but this is my life. And I want to designate that rabbi. And had she had it designated the rabbi, then what would have ended up happening? Everyone would have gone to their rabbi, which may or may not have been representative of her rabbi, and that would have raised questions. Whose psak should they, you know, respect in these circumstances? I had another case, close friend of mine, whose family member did not designate a rabbi. There are three kids in the family. Each of them called up their shul rabbis, and each of them got a little bit of a different answer. That leads to unnecessary stress and strife. And so it's very important, as much as possible, for you to designate who this person is. And by the way, it's not always so simple for people, because first of all, some of us outlive our rabbis. I got a call from someone on our helpline who's in his 80s, who's been going to shul for 80 years. He said to me, I don't have a rabbi. I said, how do you not have a rabbi? I know the guy a little bit. He said to me, you know, my rabbi was X and he passed away. And I've been traveling a bunch and I go back and forth between New York and Florida, this or that. I said to me, what about your kids? I know, you know, he told me he's got one of his sons, a member of a shul in New Jersey. He said to me, his Rav has dementia now. And I said, I know, but there's a new rabbi in the shul. And he said, well, my son doesn't really like that new rabbi in the shul. Whatever it is, right? So you understand, like, this isn't always obvious for people. And you got to figure out who this is and who your primary consultant should be and who your alternate should be. And you should tell these people, you should tell these Rabbanim, right, that you want them to fill this role. And this is really critical because sometimes rabbis will get calls and they'll be told, okay, you're named as the, you know, the posek, the rabbi, the consultant, whatever it might be. And the rabbi is like, I was? I have no idea. You know, sometimes they even don't remember who the people are. It could have been a long time ago. This document is filled out. That's why it's important to always keep these documents updated. But when he says, well, I have no idea what they have wanted, or I have no idea what their preferences are. I don't know X, Y, and Z. So it's important to let the Rav know that you like them to be and to give as many ways as possible to consult with them. Okay. That's why I give cell phone, other numbers and emails, and feel free if you know their big Facebook guy to put them on Facebook, you know, Messenger or Twitter, any way you think of how they can be reached, you should let people know how to reach them. And we're getting close to the end of the directive part now. And here we get to one area that's a sensitive area of Jewish law, but it's a very important one. And this has to do with the issue of organ donation for transplantation. We're not talking about here anything related to donating body or science or anything along those lines. This is only talking about organ donation for life-saving, immediate life-saving transplantation. Okay? This section is relevant only if death as defined by Jewish law and custom has been determined by my proxy in consultation with my named rabbinic consultant. Now, you'll notice that the formulation here we have doesn't exactly explain what is the definition of death. And the reason why we did that is, as you may know, there's a big dispute within rabbinic circles about whether halacha accepts brain death or only accepts cardiac death, whether halacha accepts the irreversible cessation of respiration as the designation of death, as the chief rabbi does in Israel, or whether it mandates that the heart has to stop. And the nafkamina to this question is whether or not we'll allow, at least as traditionally been, whether or not we'll allow organ donation. And so what we tried to do is leave that open, but at least you can designate and say, I would want, if halacha has determined death to be done, I would want organ donation to be done. Or you can say, I don't want it to be done. That's the person's choice. I don't want to get into the details of this right now so much, but you can see this on our website. There's a lot of advances today in organ donation and a lot of ability now, which I think in the next 10, 15 years is going to change, in which organizations will be possible even after the heart stops, even after cardiac death. And therefore, our default recommendation is you should authorize this, but the power remains in the hands of your proxy, who can consult with your named rabbinic consultant on this issue, and we leave it as an option, or you can say, no, I do not wish to donate any of my organs or tissues. Friends, that is the heart of this document. It's a simple document, simple in the sense that it's user-friendly, it's easy to understand. You sign it in front of two witnesses. Your witnesses have certain requirements, and I want to explain to you what we did here. If you look at some of the other rabbinic organizations, they made it state, every state has its own halachic living will. We didn't do that. We follow the model of the American Bar Association. And the way to do this is to be most stringent on who can be a witness. So the witness shouldn't be someone who is your proxy. It shouldn't be financially responsible for your healthcare. Shouldn't be a creditor. It shouldn't be entitled to benefit financially in any way. Should be your healthcare provider. Right, and so forth, right? In other words, we shouldn't be relatives. We try to find the obvious person is, you know, someone who's your next door neighbor or a friend, but someone who's not gonna benefit in any way, has a conflict of interest in your healthcare. Those people should be the ones who are consigned this. And that's it. The document then is legally binding as long as it's available. Someone asked her about notarizing. So notarizing is always a good idea. If you want to have the witnesses sign for a notary, that's fine. We give a form here as well. But in terms of a requirement by law, notarization is only required in the four states of Missouri, North Carolina, South Carolina, and West Virginia. And on the Ontario version, it's not required. Okay. In those four states, you have to have for two witnesses and a notary. For everyone else, this is optional. The one thing I will point out, though, is that, and this is a little bit of a not complication, but if you're from four great states, okay, if you're from four great states, you need to add a little document to what we provided to you. If you're from the great states of Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Ohio, or my favorite, my home state, Texas, right, you need to add your state's mandatory disclosure statement to this document. You don't have to sign anything, but it should be added to this. And that's how we created this into a multi-state document. But once you've now signed this document appropriately, right, in front of two witnesses, you now have a binding, legally, betokef, right, as we say in Hebrew, right, legally acceptable declaration, which has designated your proxy and has declared that you want decisions to be made in accordance with Jewish law and custom, and has designated and advised your consultant, your proxy, excuse me, who your rabbinic consultant should be. Now, this is a user-friendly, usable document. That's how we feel about this. And you take this document and you sign it and you bring it to your healthcare provider, make sure they have a copy. You keep the original copy of your healthcare proxy in a safe and accessible place. Don't put it in the safe deposit box. Don't leave it with your last will and testament. If you leave it with your last will and testament, they're going to be using your last will and testament when? After 120. It's not going to do anyone any good if it's not available, if it's not with you. Right? And therefore, we've created this document to be something which is easily, you can scan it. We've also created a service in which if you go back to our website, you can also upload it to this service. It's a cloud service, 24/7, 365. This is an outside vendor called USA CPR, and they also provide an emergency access card. Now, this is meant, the version that we have right now, we saw is the US, you have the Ontario version, you have the Quebec version. People have asked me, what about Israel? So first of all, we're working on a document that can work in Israel. Israel has different laws in this matter. It's a little more complicated. Same, by the way, working with the UK and with Australia as well to create documents as well that work for them. This document is not meant to be binding, the legal part in Israel. It may or may not be respected. It will be helpful for your family to know. But people sometimes say to me, you know, I split time between Israel and Canada. I split time between Israel and the US. And I recommend that you have documents that are legally binding in each of those countries, so you don't find yourself in the limbo state, right, in terms of that situation. You might go back and forth between Canada and the US. You might go back and forth between Toronto and Florida, for example. Right. So I think it's important to make sure you have documents that work in each of those countries. Okay? That, my friends, is the simplicity of this document. Now, this is great because it's clarified who should make those decisions. It's also clarified who you should be consulting with. What's the problem? What's one of the first questions that someone's going to ask if you are, imagine yourself as the proxy, and you've been given this responsibility to make decisions on behalf of someone else. What's the first decision you'd be asking yourself? What would my loved one want? Right? What would they want in this circumstance? And I cannot tell you how many times we get in the helpline calls like this. And I ask the people this first question about nutrition, about intubation, there's a lot of different questions. And I ask people, well, did you ever discuss with your loved one what they might have wanted? And very frequently the answer is no. Now, of cases where someone has both advanced Parkinson's and advanced dementia, meaning two degenerative diseases where you had a prognosis, you had a diagnosis and a prognosis, it was understood. And I understand, trust me, I understand how hard it is to have these conversations. But if you don't have these conversations, you're just kicking the bucket down the road. And what ends up happening? You're in a situation where people have to make decisions on your behalf and they don't know what to do. You have no idea what you might have wanted or not. And I remember when I sat with Herschel Schechter and Rav Willig, both of them who've given their endorsement, they're coming to this document. And I said to them, you know, when you get asked to be the Rav, what do you do with that? And Rav Schechter said to me, remember, he said, the first thing I always ask them is, well, what would you want? Like, tell me something a little bit about your preferences. Now, as I mentioned earlier, it's very hard for people to know what they want. Now, sometimes you have a really like a clear diagnosis and prognosis. Sometimes you have cancer, you have dementia, whatever it is, right? You have something that you know you're dealing with. But many times you don't. And even if you have a diagnosis, you don't necessarily know where your healthcare journey is going to take you on. And so it's really helpful to give a little bit of a sense of what your values and preferences are, right? Within the general context of the Misgaret, of the framework of Jewish law. And so what we did was we created a document, which is not a legal document. It doesn't need to be signed or witnessed. It's a document which you can use anywhere in the world. Right? And if you change your mind, so to speak, it's not really matter what you write down here. It's more about you express and how you converse with your loved ones in an open, loving manner. And so we created this conversation guide, which is precisely as it sounds. It's meant to be a springboard for a conversation, not to be a legally binding directive at any means, but to give you a springboard and let's see some of the questions that we ask. Okay? It's a few pages, but you don't have to write a lot. Use box. We have a box system here, which is just meant to give a general feel. And I want to go through this document with you together right now, because as you're going to see, you may think like, well, would I know the answer for sure? I don't know. But if you finish this document, or at least complete some of the document, you'll see that you've given your loved one a general feel of how you think about these issues. So one of the big questions has to do with pain and risk tolerance. Just a note, by the way, we changed the numerization on this document. So you see now we're dealing with a different document. The color heading is now light green as opposed to dark green, right? In the proxy and directive. This is now light green conversation guide. And we ask the following. I value undergoing potentially painful treatments if they have the potential for prolonging my life, even if they will not cure my underlying illness and may lead to significant discomfort. Generally speaking, if you have to make some decisions and you can't, you're not really in the state, maybe you can talk, but you can't, not fully in the state to make such decisions, right? Would you prefer, are you the type of person says, yeah, like I really value it, even though it's not gonna cure, it may lead to some discomfort. Some people strongly agree with that. Some people strongly disagree. Some people are like, I sort of agree with that. You know, so you can figure it out. Now, would it be different, however, though, your answer, if you have a simcha coming up, your daughter's bat mitzvah, right? Someone's wedding, right? Someone's pregnant, whatever it might be. Would that change the type of treatment you might want? May or may not impact it. And so we want to give a little bit of a feel for this. It is my medical team's responsibility to try to balance pain relief with maintaining my alertness. Meaning your doctors are going to try to make sure you're not in pain, you're comfortable, and to make sure you're aware, you're alert. But sometimes you can't maintain both. Are you the type of person that says, listen, my biggest nightmare is I don't want to be in pain? You might say, no, my biggest nightmare is I don't want to be not alert. I don't want to be like not active, engaging with my environment. And if they have to make a choice on your behalf, right, which way would you think you might turn? I value hearing this isn't so much pain, but risk tolerance. I value undergoing a high risk procedure that might shorten or jeopardize my life if it could. Meaning a lot of times high risk procedures, they could potentially cure your illness or they might jeopardize your life. Would you value that? What would you value it if it could stabilize my condition but not cure it? Or do you value if it possibly extends my life by any amount of time? Keep my heart beating as long as possible, but not cure my underlying illness. Where do you stand on these issues? Again, this is not a specific question answer. We don't know what type of question or scenario you might be dealing with. We want you to give a little bit of a feel for how you think about things, and you can write in some additional comments as well. Next section. Decision-making preferences. Again, once again, friends, this is not a long document. You're not writing a lot here. Okay? Decision-making preferences. As a patient, I generally prefer knowing. Are you the type of person that really prefers knowing as little as possible? General information, all the details. Or if I have a terminal illness, do I want to know how quickly it's progressing, only in a general sense, and knowing the best detailed estimation? Now, why would we want you to discuss this? I want you to discuss this with your loved ones so that when the moment of truth comes, you've talked about this a little bit beforehand. It's like a lot of other things in life where you have difficult conversations where the first time you discuss it and it's hard to have that conversation, but the next time you discuss it, you've already discussed this beforehand, so it's a lot easier now to speak about these issues. And so we want you to give a little bit of a feel, right? And generally speaking, and you know, what this is one of those issues where I think also a lot of times people say, you know, my dad, don't tell him, right? He can't handle it. And friends, what studies have shown is it's not the truth that people can't handle. It's the way that you're told and revealed information that is so critical. And so it's so important to be sensitive to how the doctors and family members discuss these issues. A member of Amitai's Rabbinic Advisory Committee is Rabbi Dr. Alan Glatt from Woodmere. Told me the following story. He was within his hospital with a group of patients, sort of a tough, you know, three sons, sort of tough muscle man looking around. And the sons pull him aside and say, you know, we know dad has cancer. Don't tell him, it'll kill him. Then they go inside the room and they have the kids send the sons out because the orderly is setting things up. And the father whispers to Rabbi Glatt, Dr. Glatt, doctor, I know I have cancer. Don't tell my sons. Right. So it's one of those situations where, you know, a lot of times it matters about figuring out those dynamics. And it's important to have had a situation where you've discussed in the family, right? How are we going to talk about these issues? Here gets to the two most sensitive issues, I think, in this whole document. And this relates to the following. And again, this is within the framework of Jewish law, right? Which is asked as follows. If I am deemed terminally ill. Now, sometimes you're deemed terminally ill and you can tell us exactly what you'd prefer. But sometimes it'll be hard for you to do that, or you won't be able to do it, or there'll be a lot of mixed emotions or other people will be influencing. And so you want to have a general sense. Do you want to focus then on treatments focused on comfort and managing my symptoms? Treatments focused on comfort and managing my symptoms while also being open to potentially painful treatments or procedures that might extend my life? Or treatments focused on extending my life without prioritizing my comfort. What's your general worldview here? Similarly, if you have an irreversible lack of cognition, as in cases of advanced dementia or severe brain injury, I would prefer, once again, treatments focused only on comfort and symptoms, pain management, right? Or focused on that, but also open to potentially painful treatments, or treatments focused on extending my life. Now, again, this is within the framework of Jewish law and custom. So we're not offering. This is not an option here. We're not telling, suggesting here in some states in the US and certainly in Canada, where it's really gotten out of control, euthanasia or physician assisted suicide, chas v'shalom, anything along those lines. But we want to know in general, what's your general worldview and thinking about how you think about these issues? It is so important because you can have a situation where people ask, what would mom have wanted? What would dad have wanted? And if you've had this conversation, and once you get that conversation going, you can keep on talking about these issues as your healthcare journey continues along and the pathways of life. And so we give you an opportunity to discuss this with your loved ones. And the final section, which really, as some rabbis ask me about this section, sometimes say, well, this section really isn't about psak. This isn't really about decisions per se. And I say, yes, but it's a conversation guide. It's meant to open a conversation about the things you're worried about. And one of those issues for many people is their physical and social independence. Because when thinking about aging, many people feel angst about losing physical and social independence. And it's important to share your concerns with your family members. And not because you want to say, as soon as I become a burden to you, right, stuff the pillow over my face. People tell me, they tell their kids this. That is totally unhelpful. It's not helpful to you. It's not helpful to your kids, whatever it might be. You should discuss, though, what your fears are. And so that way you can address as best as possible, given your circumstances, what these fears might be. And so we give a little bit of a conversation here, of a prompt. Are you worried about needing someone to help with your basic daily activities? Are you worried about feeling that I'm an excessive burden to others? Are you worried about feeling being alone and feeling lonely? And this is an opportunity to express this and to talk about this. I see some people here are probably filling out this document for themselves, but they also have parents they want to have this conversation with as well. Right? And that's an important thing to be able to talk to with your family members. By the way, sometimes these decisions are going to have to be made on your behalf, particularly in cases of frailty, dementia, or after hospital discharges. And so we ask people, all things being equal, if it became difficult for me to live in my home, I would value being cared for in the home of a family member, being cared for in a nursing home or long-term care facility, or remaining in my home, even if it meant limitations in the amount of skilled medical care I could receive. You have different feelings about these different options. And you have now comments to add here as well. And most importantly, you can then have an honest conversation with your loved ones about what might be possible, what might not be possible. It could be a parent has a mind, oh, I'm moving with my kids, and the kids have other ideas. It could be the parent thinks they're going to live in a certain city, and the kids are like, but none of us live there anymore. You got to come choose and live with one of us. Right, and I'm not saying these are easy conversations per se, but they're so important to have so that way you can get things out on the table and try to maximize fulfilling that which is your goal. And I always tell people, this document is not about dying. This document is about living and how you want to live and live in accordance with your values and preferences as much as possible. And so we give you this opportunity to have this conversation. And then we give one last section here. And the last section here is further thoughts. And we try to get you to write something. Give us a little bit, right? You can elaborate on some of the issues that came up as you're filling the document about your healthcare preferences, right? Your preferences or concerns about aging, invasive procedures, pain management, organ donation, decision-making. Or you could give a little bit of a general sense of your general vision of what a good death or bad death might be. You can invoke memories of experiences and encounters you've had with a dying process or death and say, I hated how Uncle David suffered from so many painful procedures. I admired my friend Sarah for fighting until the end. It meant a lot that my mother died in her own home, surrounded by her family. Or you could just finish the sentence that says, what matters to me at the end of life is. Complete that sentence. And what you see here is what we're trying to do, what's most important, isn't the specific answers, but you give a general picture from this document about how you generally see about it. And I remember I had someone who filled this out with her parents. A woman is in her late 50s. She filled out with her parents, one's 85, one's 90. They never discussed it, never discussed these issues. And she finally sat down and said, Mom, Dad, we just got to do this. We got to talk about this. There are 13 questions in the conversation guide. They completed 9 of them, but they have a conversation. And the woman calls me up and says to me, you have no idea how relieved I am and how relieved my parents are, because we clarified some things. They designated the proxy. They told me who they wanted to be consulted. And they gave me a general feel of how they think about things. And if, of course, as your healthcare journey progresses and you change your values and preferences, or you change who you want your proxy to be or your rabbi to be, what do? You go to our website, you download a new one, and you tear up the old one and take back the old copies and redistribute the new document. Right, that's the advantage of the do-it-yourself model. This is not an overly complex document, but it's a very important document because it provides so much clarity. It helps so much for your family. And I want to, you can start submitting questions. I'll start looking there as well in the chat. But I want to end with the Mishnah Navot, right? Which is Imena Nili Mili, right? If I... not for myself, it will be for me, right? Or it's, who's going to do this? Right? This is something we got to do for ourselves. We got to take advantage. We have to take the initiative and do this. That's me, mani, right? From only for myself, what am I? Right? This isn't just for you. It's for your loved ones. It's for your rabbis, it's your healthcare professionals, it's your kids. Right? You got to do this for them. V'im lo achshav, ematai, right? If not now, when? Like, what are we waiting for? What are you waiting for to get this done and to clarify these things? So this is the imperative, I think, of Im Lo Achshav Im Matai, and you now have the opportunity to fill out these types of documents. And I think this is a user-friendly document within the confines, within the framework of halacha that allows people to provide a lot of clarity to themselves and to others. Questions are coming in through the chat. Who should get these documents? So you should obviously have this document with you. If you have a regular hospital healthcare provider, you can file it with them. Your loved one, certainly the proxy, should get a copy of the document. And you know, anyone you think is going to need a lawyer, of course, can be consulted and be given this document. Anyone you think it's important for them to know exactly who's going to be making these decisions should have access to the document. With regard to the next questions about choosing in D and R, how do the answers to the questions about you specifically apply D and R? How do you translate all these answers to making this difficult decision? So DNR means do not resuscitate. It's a specific type of medical order which is sometimes offered to people depending on their diagnosis, their prognosis, their age, or whatnot. DNR is very, we specifically didn't put that in this document because it's very context dependent. Right? Here, to quote some of our not so favorite presidents of universities, context matters, right? And this, oh, come on, give me a couple of laughs here, people. It's got to be a little bit of laughs. This is a serious topic. Oh, thank you, Cindy, for that thumbs up here. Esther, I really appreciate it. All right. In any case, here the context matters greatly. DNRs are a very sensitive issue. They're very important. Sometimes DNRs are certainly appropriate option. If you look on our website, you'll see we have videos on this. We have a lot of discussions about it. But these are very much dependent on the scenario of what the person's health situation might be. One of the ways to think about this, if the heart is the first thing that's having a problem, you're going to want to do DNR because a lot of times you can store resuscitation there. We can restore things there and things will be a lot better. If this is the last thing to go, a lot of times resuscitation is not very helpful, can be very painful. But this is a larger topic that which we discussed at length on our website. What happens if you go on vacation? Should you execute a version that is applicable in that jurisdiction? Well, a little bit depends upon what you're fearful of. I mean, if your family members show up and you're in, I don't know, different country, and you show up with this document and say, listen, this is what our loved one, this is what they said, this is what they designated in the United States. And most times hospitals just want to know, they want some clarity, like who's going to make decisions on your behalf. It won't necessarily be respected because it's not a document that's respected in that country, which is why I went back to what I said to earlier. If you're in a situation where you're in a very nimble medical situation, and you're going between countries, it might be appropriate in those circumstances in order to make designations in the respective countries. There's a question here. How soon do you think we'll have a document for Israel? So another question about how this applies to Israel. So I want to explain with regard to Israel. The conversation guide is not a legal document. It can be used anywhere in the world. Canada, US, England, South Africa, France, Israel, it doesn't matter, right? It's not, it's just meant to be a conversation guide that can be used anywhere. When it comes to the legal elements, each country is a bit different. We are working on making something applicable in the UK and in Israel that works with the current documents in those countries, because those countries have real restrictions on how to apply these laws. And in Israel, there are two laws actually that govern this, one in the last 6 months, and one beforehand. It's a bit confusing. We're making a lot of progress on providing this. How do the organ donation instructions conform to the instructions I filled out under HOES? So the Halachic Organ Donor Society previously had a card in which a person can make a decision about whether they accept brain death or they accept cardiac death. And this is not the exact parallel, because what we're telling you to do is to designate here, I'm going back to the directive, and is to say, I authorize a proxy. If you feel strongly one way or another about that issue, you should put it in the conversation guide or express it to your loved one about what you'd want them to do in that situation. By the way, I should add, organ donation today is no longer a young man's game, so to speak. People used to feel like, oh, you know, if you're above 50, organs aren't relevant, organ donation is irrelevant. In New York City, a few months ago, I was speaking about this topic. Some of the room was there from one of the organ donation organizations. And he told me that a 92-year-old had passed away and donated their liver. Much, of course, my immediate response was, it must be they never drank at the Kiddush Club. Think about that, right? So next time the rabbi is giving you a reason why we shouldn't have Kiddush clubs, it's because your liver should be lived long and well. You should be able to donate them at the age of 92. But organ donation is certainly not something which is only restricted today to younger people, and it's certainly an option at later points as well. Okay, Rebbitzin.
I have one piece regarded about Israel. So somebody just wants to know, when you do have that version, how would they get it? I assume it'll be posted on your website, right?
Absolutely. So if you go to amitai.org/vote, I put it in the chat, or if you sign up for our information there, you stay connected on Amitai's website. We'll, of course, be publicizing once it's available and in various different ways. It'll be available, please, guys. We're hoping for Pesach, but there's a lot going on in Israel right now. So, Bezrat Hashem, things will calm down, but we'll see where that all goes.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I don't have any other questions, just lots of compliments and chats of appreciation. Okay, I just want to remind everybody, I've been getting a lot of questions, both by email, by chat, about recordings. Our standard procedure on Spirit, just for anybody joining us now or in the future with God's help, we always record the session unless there is some particular reason why we can't, but we let you know that ahead of time. We always record the session and it is sent automatically to everyone who registers. So everybody who's with us live and those who couldn't be with us live because they had other things, you don't have to ask us, although it's very complimentary and very flattering, it's not necessary. You will get it later on today, as long as you gave us an email that actually is accurate. Every now and then we have bounce backs because you didn't type it in properly. So that's not something we can control. But you will get it with God's help either later today or tomorrow. It will include the different links that Rabbi Dr. Brody mentioned to us, that's all going to be in there. So it's all, you just watch for your emails. It's going to come out from my email address, steinigj@ou.org. So hopefully later on today or tomorrow.
I just want to add, if anyone needs to follow up and have specific questions, whether it's for a helpline or for this document, you can access me, brody@amitai.org. Our website has has many different ways which you can reach us. So any way we can help you, we're always available.
Okay. A couple of more announcements. I know it's late and I appreciate everybody staying on to the end. Okay, next week, with God's help, we'll be having a session that people have been asking about since the beginning of COVID. We're going to be having an exercise session, and I'm very, very proud to have actually one of our colleagues from Community Projects and Partnerships, who, in addition to her job there, does exercising, and it will be something appropriate for the Spirit crowd. So join us next week for that. Power up, let's get moving. I want to remind everyone, as we end up the secular year and everybody is being hit over the head with all sorts of donations, and of course we are all donating to help Eretz Yisrael, which is of course important, please also remember the Spirit program. We are looking to do many more different types of programs. We've been increasing beyond this Tuesday program, but we need your help to continue. So please, whatever you can assist with in Spirit, we truly appreciate it. And with the idea of new programs, I'm very excited to announce two new programs, which you should be hearing about officially in the coming weeks, actually, hopefully by next week. One is, we're very happy to bring back Rena Yudkowsky, our memory expert. Everybody has really enjoyed Rena's. She will be doing a multi-session program on Wednesdays. That will be a four-part session, which does have a fee for it, but her programs are so valuable, and I'm sure people are going to want to enjoy it. It will be recorded, so if you can't make it live, everybody will get the recording afterwards, but that will only be sent to those who register. And most importantly, we're waiting for the final touches so that we can officially send it out. Spirit will be making its own mission to Israel with God's help in mid-March. I think the dates are March 10th to 14th. So please watch your emails. It will be in a Spirit appropriate program. Many of the programs going on would not necessarily be suitable for our demographic. This one will be, in terms of content, in terms of the amount of energy needed. So just please watch your emails for that. And we hope as many of you as possible can join us. I want to thank Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody so much for joining us today for such important information. And I want to thank all of you for joining us. Have a wonderful week. Be safe, be healthy, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Be well.